David, whether you have a few weeks old puppy or a senior who's seen multiple decades, any dog person like me knows the most valuable thing in the world is spending time with your pet.
Yep.
The farmer's dog makes it easy to keep them healthy, which can give you more quality years with your lovely dog.
Yeah, well, I've heard Farmer's Dog makes and delivers fresh, healthy dog food. And, you know, that's what everyone's looking for. It's recommended by vets, nutritionally balanced. It's made from human-grade ingredients, safe, clean kitchens. All that stuff matters.
Yeah. I mean, you love your dog. Why get the lousy food for your dog? Farmer's Dog is the best. Traditional dry and wet dog food options are extremely processed.
Sometimes
they use
dogs...
much lower quality. Yeah.
you put it in their bowl and they go, what is this kibble? And they knock it away. What is this canned goo?
Oh, yeah. I've had our dog, yeah, look at the bowl and then kind of crank its neck up and look at me. And it was like, really?
They go, really? Why don't you go first? You want a bite of this? Slop?
And it makes that sound.
Here you go, dog.
So Farmer's Dog isn't just higher quality food. They also send the food pre-portioned specifically for your dog based on their unique nutritional needs. It makes it easy to help your dog reach and stay at their ideal weight, David, and which is one of the biggest indicators of a full, healthy life. A fresh diet has been found to have all sorts of benefits, David, from healthier coat and skin, better breath, if you want to kiss your dog, and even easier digestion and smaller and better poops.
Let's look at a clip. It doesn't matter if your dog's young or old, it's always the right time to invest in their health for more happy years with your dog. Get 50% off your first box at farmersdog.com/fly.
Let the Farmer's Dog know we sent you. Use your code or click podcast after you sign up for your first box.
Guys, hear ye. So this is our long title holiday special with good stuff from our 100 plus episodes. We didn't want to say best of because there's just too many. There's too many good things and it sounds weird. These are just good parts, stuff that made us laugh. Anywhere you point, someone made us laugh very hard on each episode. We've got peppered in Fallon, Julie Bowen busting my balls, of course. She did the whole show. Chevy Chase, which was one of our nuttier ones, and he was hilarious. Sherry O'Terry, who's nuts, funny, great. Sudeikis, Chris Rock. There's so many, we lost track. So we're just, you'll hear clips of these people, and I think you're going to like it, and it'll be good to sort of shut you guys up, you know, over Christmas, and then we come, and then we come back, and we hit it hard when we get back. So speaking of hit it hard, I'm going to go whack off. Anyway, folks, Merry Christmas, and here we go.
So how do you two know each other? I get a sense you have had your friends, right? You know each other.
I know her.
I'm just guessing. Yeah. I don't know.
Yes. Why don't you tell him? Why don't you tell him, David? Why don't you tell your friend Dana how you know?
Yeah,
me?
What is going on here? I mean, I'm a fly on the wall right now.
I met Julie, I think, at a Golden Globes party. Is that possible?
Golden Globes party, HBO Golden Globes party. You were Steve Levitan.
Oh, I was Steve Levitan.
You were there for. You'd been nominated for Just Shoot Me.
Mm-hmm. Second time, yeah.
I'm so sorry.
We're not keeping track.
Now he's like, I don't know, when was it? Second time. So you sure it wasn't the first time, David?
No, you know what? I mix it up. It's all jumbled.
It seems all jumbled.
Every year.
It was one
of
those awards.
Did you win an Emmy? I can't remember.
I don't remember. Whoops. I don't think it's about that.
Sorry,
I think it's
it doesn't make you a better person.
Did you win an Emmy for Just Shoot Me?
I did not.
Okay.
It doesn't make you inferior. Others of
Julie,
us
we'll get
win
to
Emmys.
Your
it doesn't matter.
Award. I was back when those Emmys really meant something.
I would have given you an Emmy.
Yeah, back when they meant something. Yeah, now they just hand them out like candy.
I think you got handed too.
I think you got
right. 2011, was that the pandemic? And 2000.
Yeah, I got one of those pandemic
COVID
Emmys.
Ones, yeah.
I got a COVID Emmy.
How many nominations for Modern Family? Just say it.
I don't know.
Six, something like that.
Was it for me or the show?
Six nominations. You know what, Julie? Honestly, I thought you hosted SNL twice, and it's you.
I've never fucking.
Emmys.
No, I won
Have you
two
heard
Emmys,
of the show?
And I've never hosted SNL. No, I would never host SNL. You kidding me? That is terrifying. I watch it now. Also, I'm kind of into, like, right now, how you guys watch SNL every week, right?
Nope.
No.
We have seen. I see it on Instagram. They have clips of each sketch. I don't stay up that
late. We'll see clips. I'll go, you know, on Sunday, you can go on.
Yeah, yeah,
you can go on.
And watch
on,
all the sketches.
Right. Yeah. And watch all of it. But I the guests this year in particular are like, it's like, complete, it's all new. Like there's none of the classics, you know. There's no Tom Hanks.
It's the guest
the host. Yeah. Yeah, all the hosts. And so when I watch it now, I'm like, oh, I could maybe do it now because it's just like they're much nicer and warmer, it seems like. And it
Who
feels
is?
Like I don't know. It feels like you used to have to come on and kill in the in your opening monologue.
That's an interesting observation. So now the hosts don't have to be.
No, they are. They're really funny, but it's much more gentle and kind about that. Right. They're like, I'm so honored to be here. This is so exciting.
It's emotional, seems like there's almost serious. Yeah, a little political statement. Yeah.
And a little bit of like, this is, you know, what SNL meant to them growing up and how much it means to them to be there now. Yeah. Like even, you know, Liev Schreiber did a whole like, this is such a big deal to me. And I was like, huh?
And Martin Short is on top of a piano. He's crushing so hard.
Right. And so it's not as hard on the jokes as it was back when it would have
been. Did they reach out to you?
I would imagine
during
they
your 10 years or 11 years.
There was some soft.
Because you weren't on NBC. They're pretty loyal. You were not on NBC, right? You were ABC or not?
I was on NBC when David tracked me down.
I don't know. And that was that other show.
That was Ed. I did a show called Ed.
Oh, that is the terminology, yes.
Yeah, tracked. I was doing Ed when you were doing.
He stalked you.
He stalked me. We were at this. I was with Willie Garson.
Oh, Willie Garson, yes. That's
really okay.
He was on. He invited me as. He's like, I've had this said to me more than once. You look like somebody that's got a nice dress hanging in the closet. It's like the day before some award show. Clearly everyone else has dropped out. Could you possibly chuck on your dress and show up?
That wasn't me. That was Willie.
No, that was Willie.
Okay, yeah.
So I went with Willie, and you were there with Steve Levitan, and you walked by me and then walked right back again and go, hey, do I know you? I know you.
Hey, what's up? What's up?
And I said, no.
I think I said, do we have the same barber?
Spade has the short best haircut. Patter with women. Just even the flight attendant or whoever. You do. You have a good, they like the
because
funny.
Because funny matters. My family, I started dating David, my family was like,
here we go.
Oh, dear God. Okay. They're like, what? And I said, funny counts.
I don't need to hear behind
funny
the scenes.
Funny counts. That's the name of your next book.
Funny counts. They go, does it count that much?
Funny counts.
Funny
it
counts.
It counts a lot because you, like Lauren Michaels said once, you can't marry a face. Because eventually you don't even see the face. So you have to marry a personality. What's better than someone that makes you laugh all day long?
Right.
David.
So David tried to track me down through, but this is where he shot the
what
bed.
What channels
are we allowed
to
swear on your show?
Sure.
What the fuck?
I don't think we can say track me down again, but we can swear.
How did he, what kind of tracking device did he use? Was it a private detective?
A publicist.
Okay.
Which was such a fucking C minus.
I want to be tracked down.
Well, listen,
isn't it flattering to be tracked down a little bit?
Not by a publicist.
There's no other way. By telegram?
When you figured out that, because at first I told you I was a dog walker.
Okay.
Because you were like, I know you. I go, no. Because I was like, if he doesn't know me, what am I going to give you my resume? No. Right. You had no idea who I was. You just
did the right thing.
Thought I was cute. I said I was a dog walker. Mm-hmm. You're like, And That's then I ran into you at another party somewhere. And then the next thing I knew, you did track me down through. You figured out I had been in Happy Gilmore with Sandler.
Okay.
Anytime he's mentioned, I try to do that.
And
she did the best.
But you didn't bother to go through Adam. You didn't go through anybody personal.
I didn't think I want Adam knowing my personal business.
So what? This is a Conan Johnson PR firm, and we're looking for Miss
Julie
Bowen?
It was
Bowen.
Literally this woman. I don't remember her name, but she tracked me down. I had a couple calls from her. David would like to talk to you. David would like to, and I was like, fuck that.
They would like to see in his office.
You literally were fuck that?
Well, I got.
She's like, fuck that.
Yeah, a publicist?
You were on Ed, right?
I was on Ed.
It was not a lascivious fuck that.
I'm going to fuck that. No, it was a fuck
No, it was not that for sure.
It was not that. It was not that.
I
and
know,
then.
But that you did that perfectly.
I was living in New York in this building. I remember I was in the gym really early watching TVs with no, you know, they had with no sound. No volume. And I see that you had been tased by Skippy.
Well, okay. That's so a story we have not explored.
You haven't explored this?
On this podcast. It's been mentioned, though.
David was tased by Skippy.
I know the whole story.
Tased and beaten.
Well,
tased was the beginning to disarm me. Disarm the muscular.
It was a night of terror.
My attention, did I mention that the volume was not on the TVs? I was doing my best.
So what did you so then I was like, where?
Anyone who gets tased, I'm going to go to Arby's with.
Yeah, I definitely. I was like, now where was that scrap of paper I wrote down from the publicist giving me his number?
That
so
asshole.
I called him and I was like, hey. Yeah,
that's when you called me about that?
That's when I called you. I go, hey, it's
you
Julie,
had your
heard,
opener.
Are you all right? I just saw you got tased by Skippy. And you said, now will you go out with me?
No, I said, no, I realized my dick's still working because I got all excited. I'm sorry. Can we take
what,
that
was
out?
You actually was didn't
dick
say working? That.
Well, wait a minute. Was it dick? You said
no,
dick working?
You said, now
said,
will you
who?
Go out with me?
Now will you go out with me? Sounds more like dick.
Now will you go out with me? I had to get tased to get a date.
After I was laid up for a while in very pain, I started to come to my senses. I don't even remember these calls because it was
so much pain.
So much calls, so much pain. I didn't even know about Vicodin until right after this. So anyway.
You knew about Vicodin by the time we went on a date. Yeah. You were little V-chippies.
Yeah. Okay,
yeah,
maybe.
I remember a lot of that.
Oh, yeah. I had a puka shell made of Vicodin.
No, you didn't.
You ate your necklace today.
Everybody needs to know about David is that he's the most like sensitive, delicate flower who has low blood sugar, has to carry around a little rat bag full of like turkey and chicken.
Oh, there's protein bars all over this mansion.
And they're
every
and
corner.
Like even
it's
though
like
he
having a puppy.
He wants to go like party, but it's at like 6 p.m.
6:30.
In bed at 8:45. But
damn.
We're kindred spirits. We like to eat at 3:30. We ask the restaurants to open.
And now for a word from our sponsors at Betterment. Let's talk about hustle culture. You know the whole rise and grind, go big or go home thing. It's a lifestyle that may not be for you, but one that your money can handle thanks to Betterment. Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. How? Their automated technology optimizes your investments again and again. With Betterment, your money is taking ice baths at 5 a.m. while you get your well-deserved rest. Your money downs protein smoothies and automatically reinvests your dividends all before you head out the door. Your money's a workaholic, but you don't have to be because you've got Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
I mean, I love both of you guys so much. I can't even tell you. I want to go into your career and your stuff and everything you've done to influence me. You know, I wanted to be Dana Carvey. I wanted to be... That's my whole reason for getting on Saturday Night Live. And that was my whole thing.
Oh, you said David Spade wrong.
I think that's age. That's age related because David. That's
no,
age
I wanted to be Dana
David,
Carvey. I was sitting behind Rent Reed through with a knife.
Well, yeah, you were my surrogate. You were my stand-in. Sometimes I do the church chat rehearsals. David had to get the dress on and sit in there for camera blocking, which
David,
I thought was
just
horrible.
For a few minutes. Can you sit in there? Dana's resting.
But Jimmy, you were 12 when I got on SNL, and that's what I call the peak formative year. It's like when I was listening to Monty Python or whatever gets in your brain at that age and through high school. So I appreciate you, bro. Thank you.
I can't even tell you how much I would, I was such a SNL nerd. I would record it every Saturday night. I would be by myself. I wouldn't be, I didn't want friends over. I didn't want anyone around me. My parents, I didn't want anyone near me. I just wanted to study the show and watch it. And I'd videotape it. Then I remember like my favorite sketches and then I would go to parties like whatever the next week or whatever, and I would bring videotapes with me with the best clips of SNL. Like I was like a human YouTube, just going like, or watch this part and watch this thing. But I mean, I was like, I loved chopping broccoli.
And then she went downtown.
But can
she
I tell you
some?
It's silly.
She brought, whoa.
She's a lady I know. If I didn't know her.
I didn't know. Did you ever put that out? Like, is that out on Spotify or something?
No. The only thing I want to say, which was mind-blowing a few years back when I did your show, and then it wasn't my idea, but all of a sudden they go, Jimmy wants to do Chopping Broccoli with an orchestra. Remember
oh
that?
God.
It was fucking crazy. So that was the mic drop of Chopping Broccoli. There was a string orchestra. And then I was playing John Barclay on a baby grand. I had a terrible hair day because New York water just flattened it. But anyway, that's just my... But I chop and broccoli, and I took it really far. She chopped. She chopped.
She chopped. She chopped.
I think
that's 20. That's a 20-minute bit in my stand-up, as you can imagine. But anyway, that's so you, Jimmy. We do have a kismet. There's a connection to this musicality of what we do and the way you do impressions and everything.
I brought a guitar. I mean, I'm in my office. So
will you play something for us? That'd be awesome.
You know, Dana, while Jimmy's futzing around, I have to say that if you're on SNL and you can play an instrument, Jimmy's like the perfect SNL guy. He plays an instrument. He's marginally good looking. He was voted one of the tallest hosts of the year. And he's got a harmonica, this fucking guy.
Oh, I know he's going to do.
Just for the people at home.
I know he's going to do that Supernatural. He's either going to do, he's going to do one of three, either Dylan, Lennon, or Springsteen, all brilliant.
Dylan's one, but I thought maybe Neil Young, too.
Just give me anything. This I'm being entertained now by my guests.
Neil Young would play the harmonica, like he plays it differently than Dylan. Neil Young plays harmonica like with the song, so he's like...
Oh, there we go.
There, something changed. Yeah, it's good now. Yeah.
Can you hear it now?
Now we hear it. Perfect.
Okay. All right. So, like Neil Young plays the harmonica like with the
notes. Yeah.
So it's like.
David and Dana. Sitting in a tree.
Dana and Dave.
We're just a fly on the wall down the hall of SNL. That's pretty
SNL.
Good.
SNL.
SNL. Dana and Dave.
Did anyone ever call you Dave?
Some people do. You have to get in the real tight circles.
And then Dylan's faster. Dylan's like...
Yeah, and a lot of up and back.
Like he hits the highest note of the harmonica and just screams it. So like...
Yeah.
This is the podcast about Dana and Dave, a son of my world, and a similar thing. Go. Sign of war. He runs out of stuff, he hits the harmonica.
Yeah, exactly. When he runs out of lyrics.
Have you heard Rough and Ready, his latest album, Rough and Ready, Bob Dylan?
Yes.
God, it's brilliant.
Is it good?
Soon After Midnight is a masterpiece.
But he's got his new voice, which is
That's what I mean. That this other voice, I haven't really tried to do it, but it's pretty special. It's really raw.
Soon After Midnight, and I got a date with the Fairy Queen. With the Fairy Queen.
I love seeing him in concert because sometimes he doesn't feel like performing, and he's just out there, and he's going like. And I'm like, oh man, this is weird. And then he's like, how does it feel? And you go, oh, I love this song.
Oh my God.
Do you mind if I lick this?
Chevy Times.
Did you ever meet Farley in the old days?
Chris Farley?
Yes, sir.
I did. And Lauren had asked me to talk to him about the drug issue.
Chevy, if you could talk to Chris, might help. Might not, but might.
I like your Lauren.
It's kind of quiet.
Will you do a little Lauren first?
Yes.
It's that thing of like, if you could talk to Chris, you know, about drugs, it might be like a really good thing. I love his
rhythms. So I did talk to him.
And how'd it go?
Well... He didn't have enough drugs for both of us, so...
See, that's a classic. These have been landing all day for me.
I mean, they're hitting for me.
They're hitting. Once you get into his comic frequency, it's like... It's just fun. Greg is laughing very hard. You wished you'd stayed longer at SNL. I kind of wish I did a couple more seasons.
I feel like I'm here longer than SNL.
You never set up a camera. We can adjourn anytime.
Actually, I do. I do. Thank you.
Yes.
Actually,
man and wife.
I do. That's funny too.
Did you do 40 shows?
Well, how tall are you? Thank you.
5'8" and a half on a good day.
So you?
Yeah. No, actually, the answer to your question. I forgot the fucking question.
You could have done movies during the summer and stayed on the show.
I would love to have stayed, and mm-hmm. I really mean that. I mean, I left because of a girl. I had a picture of the girl, and I kept saying, I'm gonna marry this because look at you, beautiful. And Lauren kept saying, no, she isn't. And Doug Kenny from the National Lampoon became one of my best friends. Actually became my best friend. And that's all I got.
Did he write Animal House?
Hmm?
Did he write Animal House?
Doug, yeah. Doug Kenny. He was one of the writers. I think that Harold stepped in there too.
Harold Ramis.
It was always, what's his name, who wrote these things, the book or the thing? John.
Was it Landis? No.
Jonathan.
John Hughes.
John Hughes.
Yeah.
For instance, with, what was the movie I did with Harold?
Vacation, honey.
Right, thank you.
Vacation.
Yeah. Sammy and Harold completely rewrote it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, you have to rewrite him, Hughes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see. Because he was not comedic like you guys.
You're not Jewish.
Oh.
Well, if he gives you a blueprint of a great movie, you can fix it.
Chevy, during the podcast, puts his hands up like he's holding a loaf of bread and looks at it.
Show how big everyone's dick is.
A loaf of bread. Show it.
His,
how is...
That's quite a loaf, I know. It's quite a loaf. Ed wants a slice.
Oh, boy.
Oh,
boy.
And blabby.
Do you do a Lorne impression?
Everybody almost does.
Everyone in this oral history of Saturday Night Live. Even
only because
Lorne
I've never met anyone like that. You know what I'm saying? And like,
no one has.
And I'd seen Austin Powers a million times before I actually got the job. So then I went there and I'm like, so wait, he's not admitting that this is that? Because this is totally that.
That sounds like a new sketch. This is that. This is totally that.
This is totally that. Yeah.
Well, did you have any Lorne-isms? We sometimes collect, you know, things that he says to people. You know, the initial one was never underestimate the value of water is a kind of a touchstone for a lot of people.
Yeah. And he also like has a way of like summing up large occurrences in the world. It's like, because you know, Elvis was a twin. So it's that. It was like, what exactly
a good one.
Is, what does that
yes.
mean?
Yes. Hitler was a painter.
Yeah.
Hitler was a painter, and so it's all that.
So it's that.
World War II? What?
I never know what that is. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what you mean. You're
who should take
up
over for Lorne? Keenan, do you have any ideas? Who's good enough to handle that job?
Higgins. Hands down, Higgins. You know what I mean? Like,
I have him on a list here. Steve Higgins.
Yeah.
I mean, Higgins is a no-brainer, but Eric Kenward is out there, you know, like Aaron Doyle, you know, the people that have been there for a longer period of time. I think Colin, you know, myself, I don't know, Che, like we can all handle it. Like if we all wanted to stick
around
and keep it going.
Would you entertain it if they approach you?
Yeah. Like, why not? It'll keep me in New York. It'll keep me, you know, in a stable environment, which is hard for an actor.
I'm just gonna write your name down for a second. I'm just keeping it.
Write it down. Put it in the universe. Thanks.
That's great. I think you. We don't have pens. I don't have. I'm disorganized. Seth Meyers and Tina Fey
all of them. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like anybody that's especially been a person with a pencil in their back pocket for a week. You know, just fishing for jokes and like knows the structure of the show. So Seth, Tina, any one of them, I think, you know, that have had a good run at it and enjoy it, they can get it, you know.
Well, you're interesting because you're 20 years. You know every in and out. You know what's going on. If you just perked your ears up to like budgets and stuff, you could figure it out pretty quickly.
But there's also like the other element where Lorne is such a rock star and he has so many like, you know, pick up the phone favor kind of, you know, moments that he can make
deals
happen
with
for the show.
With the network or the studio, just deals with them.
Yeah.
Know, and
keeps them away from us, you know, keeps us protected. Like, he's just an OG. So someone that can continue that kind of thing and like make it a safe space for us and then also make a phone call and get a legend in there at the last minute if it needs to be that.
Yes, there's a lot of off-label things that he's doing that go beyond executive producer. And I think he does always develop a fondness for his cast members. You can feel it, you know? I mean, he's talked very nicely about you, almost in a paternal way with other cast members. He becomes the de facto dad that no one ever had or something, even though I'm 3 years older than him. He's still kind of my dad. No,
that's so crazy.
Yeah. But
that must be a crazy dynamic because, he's the one we all kind of turn to because if he's not happy, like, you know, the shit's not getting on. You know what I'm saying? Like, if he's not fucking with it, then that's the end all be all. So I've gone to him for a lot of different, you know, nothing pertaining to the show kind of advice because he just gives that air, basically. Like, you know, if you have a question or, you know, if you have a situation, we can help you with it. You know, nothing's too, you know,
go ahead.
Too terrible that we can't fix it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And when I was sort of, you call it wilderness years or raising a family, whatever you want to call it. But then I ran into Lorne. He's just like, he said, everyone knows who you are. You know, it's just Lorne in a very supportive little, like, you know, whenever you're ready, you just can do it some more. But yeah, he's brilliant at those kind of, just been there, seen it all. And then
he was like a stepdad to me because he used to ground me and hit me.
Okay. You want to talk,
that actually
you
was
want to talk
Jim Downey.
About that hitting part?
No, a lot of people did.
Let's break some news. We got a trend.
Handful.
You were like the spoiled child. David's like a little boy, and you have to take care of him.
Dana, will you bounce him on your knee?
David need a spanky.
David, he need a little spanky, and he's in a timeout. Don't talk to him.
I'm not going to use any sort of object or spatula. I'm going to go full hand.
Yeah.
But it'll be just on the bottom.
Skin on skin.
That's good for Lorne. Skin on skin. Reality TV has hit a new high on Hulu. From executive producer Jimmy Kimmel, the all-new Hulu original series High Hopes is finally here for your viewing pleasure.
The Hulu original reality series follows two budding entrepreneur brothers and their hilarious half-baked employees at one of the fastest-growing cannabis dispensaries in Hollywood. This workplace comedy showcases the highs and even more highs of the competitive marijuana industry.
More than just co-workers, the owners and bud tenders in High Hopes are one dope family.
You'll fall in love with these quirky characters as they pursue career aspirations, love, and fame, all under a slightly hazy cloud.
All episodes of the new reality series High Hopes are now streaming only on Hulu.
True Green is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. Now, you're out there, you have acres and acres, hundreds of acres. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. No. Weed control, which you hate, fertilization, aeration.
Huh? Can't stand it.
Among others. They'll do all of that, so you can do literally anything else. Dana's out there like Yellowstone. You have better things to do in your free time. I know you do. You don't want to focus on lawn care.
True Green is too good to be true, is what I'm saying. But it is true. Right, David? Because you're going to have more time to do things that you want to focus on.
All the hard work, and it gets you to a great lawn. That's what you want. You take care of everything else you got to do in your life. You're very busy. Let True Green take care of this one thing. Get it off your plate.
You know what? I do have some space. I want to put some grass down. I'll call you later, True Green.
Talk to True Green. Where can listeners purchase or learn more? You go to TrueGreen.com. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, guaranteed.
You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour.
Whoa.
They offer a satisfaction guaranteed, and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. That is such a cool thing.
Good job, True Green. You're nailing it.
In the soap operas, they would come in and go straight to the bar. There was never a TV on in the soap operas, right?
Right. Yeah.
And so I would make up a makeshift bar and have Kool-Aid in a vase that you could see through. That was my carafe. And then I would have ice and tongs to put. And then when my mother would walk in, I would stand the way the camera shots. You know how in soap operas—
sort of open out.
The camera comes in and then the person is talking to them from in back of them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like yeah. a rack right? focus. It's, yeah, kind of.
Mm-hmm. Right. So my mother would come in and I go, oh, mother, you startled me. I didn't hear you come in.
Mother, you startled me.
Yeah. And she would go like this, who the fuck left the door open with the air conditioner on? And I would go like this in my mind, cut.
God, so your survival mechanism was to almost live inside a soap opera with so actual. Funny.
I lived inside, and no one knew what I was doing. It was really crazy, just kid. Myself. And then I would watch like Little House on the Prairie.
Yeah.
I'd go upstairs, put my hair in plaits, you know, in braids, and then get on my prairie pajamas. And I would come down, and my mom would be in the kitchen. I go, Ma, when's Pa coming? And she goes, what? I go, when's Pa coming home? And she goes, I don't know, but you better have fucking money. Yeah. Cut!
So
it was like,
okay.
My dad didn't live with us. So it was like, whatever, you know. And in my mind, I was constantly, cut!
Because it wasn't going the way you wanted. It wasn't going like a TV show.
You can't curse on TV. Yeah. And I'm just, and then I remember I would watch like, the Ten Commandments was just on the other night.
Oh, the movie? The original?
Yeah, because it's Easter. Easter is coming. Easter, so they, you know, and I used to live for the Ten Commandments.
Yeah.
You know, and I would be watching it and I'd go in the other room. My mom and her friend are smoking cigarettes and, you know, talking, and I would get a ladle and I would fill it with water and give it to my mom and say, Mom, can you hand this to me? And she's like, What do you want, Sharon? I go, could just hand it to me. And then my mom's friend would say, honey, I'll hand it to you. And I go, no. And my mom would go, I'll hand it to you. Just give it to me. So she would take it and then she would hand it to me. And I would drink it down really fast. And I go, you are kind. I will dwell in this land. And she goes, dwell in the other room.
Have you done a one-woman show about this relationship?
It's so good.
And then my friend, I would say to my mom's friend, you are strong. You stood up to the Malachite.
And so you were
kind of
like,
you remember that from?
Well, I just know the Cades. I actually read the Bible after I saw it when I was like 8 or something. I started reading the Bible.
Wow.
After I saw
it. Are you serious?
Oh, yeah. I was just like, maybe this is true, man. This looks pretty real. I was like, you know, I was like 7. It was like a documentary to me.
Oh. I'm going to get to the bottom of this religions thing and I'm going to open the book.
He's like, yeah, is the Bible a real thing? Yeah. And then he goes, oh, there is one at the library. Let me delve into this a little bit.
Dana, that's adorable.
And years later, just a flash, which I want to ask you too. I'm with Charlton Heston on SNL and Lawrence wants to get him to do church chat, church lady with Moses. And he didn't want to do it. We're kind of pressuring. I didn't want to pressure him, but he goes, this isn't.
Oh my God, that would have been so awesome.
It's so surreal, those kind of things. But back to this, I just want to couch this for a second. So your mother's, you probably love her. She's very aggressive. There's a lot of tension in the house. You escape into these shows and use three-dimensional props to kind of become a part of these calming shows. The Ten Commandments. Yeah. Did you have a crush on Michael Landon? I was going to ask, because wasn't he sort of a teen idol in a way for a while?
Yeah. No. Well,
Little House on the Prairie.
No, I mean, did I?
I like the blind girl.
I thought he was. David's like, what I could have done with that chick.
She couldn't see that I'm not that cute. I would just tell her I was.
Not with that lighting. Like,
not with this lighting. Not with that lighting. My lighting is
so bad.
You
can't see him, listeners, but David's got gothic kind of lighting on him.
My hair looks cool, and no one believes me, and I don't care. I'm going to the
wall
with this.
We have great hats. I got to get a cool hat.
You have a hat on.
Well, because I was throwing you guys off because there was so much shade on my face and lighting. It looked crazy.
So, Sherry, this is so interesting. I'm just so, you know, when I think about you as a performer, just the word that comes in is committed.
As a woman?
Well, as a woman, that's a whole other, that'll be our second hour. We'll delve into your sexuality and everything, you know.
No, you're very attractive.
I mean, you questions myself.
You know, sue me and we adore you.
But were you as committed? I mean, you're so committed. You're watching these shows, little kid. You got props and you're talking like biblical characters to your mom. What the fuck are you doing? I so love you, mother. How did this inform you as a performer? I mean, obviously you developed an ear and you were theatrical, but you'd never done anything official till you go into Groundlings. And then how many years into that were you in the main company and ready for SNL? How long did it take you?
I did 2 years of classes and then 2 years in the Sunday company, writing and performing every Sunday. And then I got into the main company. I was in the main company for a year and a half. And I would say that SNL was my first job.
Wow.
And that was, you were prepped enough, right? Because you were doing pretty much exactly SNL, pretty much.
Yeah. I mean, I just kept the same kind of writing and just kept, there's, you know, I learned the difference between theater and television. I remember writing something in the Groundlings that did really well, but it died. And I remember Colin Quinn saying, "Cher, I don't know if this is going to come off the way it did in theater, because when you talk out in theater on a stage, the audience can imagine the fourth wall. If you do it on television, you just look crazy if you're talking out." You know what I'm saying? Yeah, and gotcha. I did not know the difference between that. And I remember it was Kevin Spacey, and I had done this character where she has a party every year, the same party, and the only two people show up, but she acts like there's a lot of people there. She says all the things that you say when it's a really packed party. You know what I mean?
Right.
Did you find parking? excuse me, I just got a request. The keg is beat. We're a young party. The keg is beat. We got to put, I'm going to pass a hat around. And all these things. And stupid. I did it with Kevin Spacey, and it just died because of what he said. Because a lot of it was me talking out to people that weren't there. And it's kind of confusing. But, and then I remember Lauren always saying, "Sherry, do you know where your camera is?" And I thought it was a trick question. I go, "Yeah, no, you don't." And he goes, "The people at home would like to see you too." And I didn't even know what he meant.
Kansas is
Now you play basketball.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing I ask, I'll ask this first. Could you touch the rim?
I could.
Could you dunk a baseball?
I could dunk a baseball, yes. I probably dunked a basketball 10 times in my life.
Shut up.
Never
really?
During a game with a referee. I was just talking about this yesterday.
Any witnesses?
Well, there's basketball going on right now. A lot of basketball, so I'm just...
Yeah, so dunks, you're six, dunking's on everyone's mind.
2 or 6'1"? 6'1". 6'1". What's your wingspan,
though? Oh, probably 6'1". Probably nothing spectacular.
There's you had a pretty good vertical to get a basketball.
It was also adrenaline. I also had a lot of friends that could jump, and so it's a little bit of peer pressure that way, too, where it's just, come on, just shut up and do it. But I do remember if I dunked 10 times, six of those times were one day after playing basketball, like in between junior, senior year, you know. Sophomore, junior year, like during summer.
That's unreal, dude.
My dad put up a 9-foot hoop and it fucked all the kids because we were awesome on the 9-foot hoop. And then we go to high school. What the hell is
it doing? air ball after air ball.
Yeah, exactly.
I can get the net. I can dunk on the net.
9 foot is awesome.
It's less of a big deal now. I feel like, you know, shooting threes off the dribble is what it's all about now because of, you know, Steph Curry and whatnot. But back when I was playing, dunking was the biggest deal in the world. I mean, that's the test market for those strength shoes, you know, that they, you know, that
Kramer wore. That would kind of create.
Yeah. I mean, I had a pair for the legit reason. I would jump rope in them all the time. A lot of time spent on that. But
You know, when they do it now, they go past half court. It's like one step, two step, shoot it. And you go, Oh. Jesus, how do you guard? You don't even know what's happening.
He changed everything.
It's just 1-2, boom, and you go, and then they make it 90% of the time.
Yeah, him, Caitlin Clark on the you know the women's college circuit too. I mean, it's all over the place, all over the world. Yeah, just shooting.
You play Sandler?
Adam and I have played. I think we may have played once or twice, but not enough to have a scouting report. Mm. I hear he's good. I know.
He gets into it.
He's competitive too.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
What are you doing? Yeah, exactly. It's all fun and games till the game starts. Exactly. And I'm like, like, get open. I go, what the? You don't talk to me like that.
Jesus, Happy Gilmore. Yeah. I'm not funny.
He goes, check the call sheet. I go, all right. Like,
you are not triggering financing out here, buddy. Yeah. We are all the same. No, but no, he plays, he's played in a game with my buddy Sam Jones that I've played in a few times and buddy Brad Morris. But yeah, I haven't played maybe once or twice. I mean, the most fun I'd had playing in the was hearing the stories of Gary Shandling's game, then getting invited to go play in that with Sarah Silverman.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, and before he passed, and then a huge thing was when Gary was like, "Hey, you can come without Sarah if you want."
That's a big deal.
A lovely sort of, because I'd read about that game forever.
Gary Shandling's house.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
And be Sarah, you. I mean, who were the regulars?
Oh my gosh! I mean, McKay was there.
Jimmy Miller.
Jimmy was there a couple
Kevin
times.
Neal? I used to go in the early days, but there was a run there when I went and I was no good and I sort of got pushed in the background.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just not the emails anymore.
You could be a Muggsy Bogues out there.
I was like distraction, whatever they call it.
Yeah, I just want you on the out there, like on the side, just like, you know,
we need a new guy. We need five to keep it even. You go out there and run around in circles.
Or a spud web. I would have been a spud web. Yep. But no, I got out of that quickly. I was D basketball in high school and our center was literally 5'3". He controlled the paint.
Yeah.
That was when they had D basketball. Five foot tall, 91 pounds as a freshman. What about you? Were you always a bearded stud in high school? Were
no,
you a
no, late no. Boomer? It was a beard of acne, like any of us, right? Oh. Like, I don't think I could grow a beard until about an hour before I got here.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, "the bigger the ROAS, the better," over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/wall to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/wall. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Hmm.
I had
to learn. Hey, ¿qué pasa?
Oh, hey.
Hey, ¿qué pasa?
Is that what they say when you walk into sushi?
I think that's what's happening in Spanish. ¿Qué pasa? ¿Qué pasa? David Ospero.
I had a difficulty learning German in high school. It's a very tough language.
Hmm.
I did it through that textbooks and a teacher. I would have rather had Rosetta Stone.
You know, you not being able to learn German is very, very interesting.
But stupid. Now, Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program. We know this. Available on desktop as an app. Truly immerses you in the language you want to learn.
Yeah, this is planning a trip to Italy. And I think Rosetta Stone is my ticket to speak a better language.
Hey,
I want a pizza pie. But I'll be saying it in Italian. Hey, I want a pizza pie. Sounds like
that's better
English, but it's still that was.
They
Italian.
Say, do you want to sound perfectly fluent, or do you want to sound like Ratatouille?
Honestly, trusted experts for 30 years, David, with millions of users and 25 languages offered. You want to hear some?
Yeah, the
Spanish,
big ones.
Spanish, French, Italiano, Sturman, Korean, Chinese, Javanese,
careful,
Dutch, Arabic, Polish.
Fast language acquisitions. Rosetta Stone.
Should I read that straight?
It immerses you in many ways. No English translation, so you really learn to speak, listen, and you think in the language, Dana. That's the hard part.
No, I do like their process. The intuitive process picks up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. it's designed for long-term retention, David, because we all took Spanish in high school, and all we can say is donde está la biblioteca.
Yeah.
I can find a library, but nothing else. Rosetta Stone is a game changer.
It's like having David. A personal trainer for your accent. It's convenient. We said the desktop, the app options, audio mm-hmm. companion. You can do it offline. It's amazing value. Lifetime membership has all 25 languages.
Mm-hmm.
For any and all trips and language needs in life, that's lifetime access to 25 language courses Rosetta Stone offers for 50% off. That is wow. a steal. I'll say that in English, a steal.
Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Fly on the Wall listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off.
Visit rosettastone.com/fly. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/fly today.
How did your anger express itself then to you?
I mean, here's the weird thing. It's when I was, my childhood, I was bullied ridiculously. Half of it, the bullying, is because I was just a little guy. And then I got bused to school. So I was a little guy and I was black, mm-hmm. right? It's hard. So it's yeah. like, I'm getting double bullied. If I was white, I would have probably got bullied too, but it was just double. Like, ah. Mm-hmm.
But you're also just, supposed to be tough, probably.
Yeah, it was pretty rough, right? And it was pretty like every day. So it's weird. I had a weird temper. It's going to be a weird thing. I was the oldest of seven
mm-hmm.
and I was weirdly smaller than my younger brothers. So it was a weird thing where your brothers are like, hey, so-and-so down the block bothered me. And I'm like, I got to fucking go protect Andre or Tony.
Yeah.
Wow. And I'm fucking smaller than them. So anyway, one day a guy really disrespected me really bad, like mushed me at a party and like mushed me and pushed like kind of like kicked sand on my face in front of girls and shit. And I went home. I put a brick in a book bag. This is like a legendary story in my life.
Like Bad right? Boys. Yeah.
And I fucking swung that shit and smacked this guy in the face with this brick. And then stomped him Joe Pesci style.
Wow.
Now, to the point, we thought he might die for like, even like 3 days later, every time a cop or whatever would come through the block, would be like, we're literally talking about ways of getting me this down south, like that would have helped.
Huh.
Long story short, from that day on, as my shrink puts it to me, you have been scared to be angry ever since.
Mm.
So the guy you saw was bending over backwards to be nice because I was so scared of my anger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see.
Yeah, I was Hulk-like. Frightened of what, you know, my shrink, the good shrink I got, you know, like the top guy.
There's good ones and bad ones. Yeah, definitely.
There's good ones and bad ones, mm-hmm. you know, and he broke it down. It's like, we got to get you over that incident,
right?
Because you're a nice guy and this guy brought out something in you and you're so scared of that thing coming out of you again,
yeah,
that you let the whole world walk all over you.
Mm-hmm.
Your friends walk over you, your family walks over you, your female relationships, like everybody just fucks you over because it's somewhere in there they know you, there's a force field holding you back.
Interesting. So confrontation,
I'm like the opposite of you mm-hmm. in the sense that in the last year, now I can get angry.
Right.
I'm not scared of letting people know how I feel about certain
that,
things.
My therapy was about that too, though, because I was always the nice guy holding stuff in and not really. My aggression, my competitiveness overrode the nice guy, because people who ask me, who meet me now, well, did you just allow other cast members, like, oh no, Lauren, do their sketch, that kind of thing. There was a natural competition in me. But in my personal relationships, I hated confrontation because when confrontation happened at my house, bodies flew. My dad was just really violent. So I, even all my siblings are like that. We don't like confrontation.
Yeah, no, that's
and that goes
my,
too
my
far.
House too. It wasn't violent per se, but it was loud as fuck.
Yeah.
So.
But those things stick with you, just loud.
Yeah, it just sticks with you. So now, yeah, I can kind of, I can tell you, hey, I didn't like what you said to me, or I didn't like what you, without losing my head, without hitting anybody.
Well,
with
that's all.
Break.
That's a home run for therapy.
This has been a podcast presentation of Cadence 13. Please listen, then rate, review, and follow all episodes. Available now for free wherever you get your podcasts.
No joke, folks. Fly on the Wall has been a presentation of Cadence 13. Executive produced by Dana Carvey and David Spade, Chris Corcoran of Cadence 13, and Charlie Finan of Brillstein Entertainment.
The show's lead producer is Greg Holtzman, with production and engineering support from Serena Regan and Chris Basil of Cadence 13.